Well, good afternoon. Hi, Donna. For those of you who don't know who that is, that's Donna Sarkar. She is the leader of the Inside Up program for Windows. Thank you all so much today for making time for this session. I'm really proud to be able to deliver this important talk on where we're going with Windows and how Windows fits into your digital transformation. My name is Bill Karagounis. I have this title. I'm what's known as the Director of Program Management for the Windows Operating System Fundamentals and the Product Owner for the Insider Program in total. Now, some of you might be wondering, what does Operating System Fundamentals mean? It basically means that when I wake up in the morning, I think about the compatibility of Windows, I think about the performance of Windows, battery life, reliability, the deployment, you know, Windows' ability to run setup and upgrade from one version to another. It's not actually pushing the button, but actually making sure that that actually works, as well as all of the systems that support our Insider program, which basically means the operating system flighting system, which is the thing that gives you builds of Windows 4 days after we compile them, as well as all of the feedback systems behind all of that Insider program. Quick show of hands. Who in this room is a Windows Insider? All right. Thank you so much for all of you that have delivered feedback to our program and helped us build the fastest deployed version of Windows we've ever done. For those who aren't, I encourage you to have a look and get in the program. I'm going to be talking a little bit more today about some of the new things that are coming with the Windows Insider program. So let's get stuck in. Okay, digital transformation. So digital transformation is changing business and how employees work. The way we think about it is in four terms. We think about it from a perspective of engaging your customers to know what they need, optimizing your operations, because when you optimize operations, what that means is you've got more capacity to deliver more value. Transforming products and services that we offer to our customers so we stay relevant in their minds, as well as empowering our employees. We want to get to a point where the people that we serve, the people that are using our technologies and products, the technology is a tool that kind of blends away. It's sort of invisible. Ultimately useful, but not something that provides friction. You want the people that are using your technology and systems to be at the most productive and just loving the stuff that you give to them. From my perspective, IT can be the hero as part of this digital transformation. Now, we realize that many of you have got constrained resources. You're responsible for many mission-critical systems that have to keep running. They just can't stop. But we believe that with Windows 10, we can offer you the ability to digitally transform your organization, and Windows 10 can help in a very dramatic way. So, let's talk a little bit about Windows 10. And one of the things, actually, I should test people a little bit. Some of you may be feeling a little bit of cognitive dissonance. You know, I'm one of the people that makes decisions about Windows and Windows and devices, but my accent probably doesn't fit the kind of accent that you'd expect one of these people who live in Redmond and make these decisions to look like. Open kimono, I'm an Aussie, although some people have told me that my accent is a little bit bastardized by now. I grew up in Sydney. So if anything, IT pros in Australia have got a very strong voice that's at the table as part of making decisions for the Windows and Devices group. And you kind of see the kind of stuff that's on my shoulders on a daily basis. So, going back to your programming, when we released Windows 10 in July of 2015, we knew that there was inherent value from a business perspective and an enterprise perspective. We were pleasantly surprised when we did release it, the number of customers that started to use it and started, or I shouldn't say use it, started to deploy it and do pilots And then, you know, customers actually got quickly into deployment cycles. We knew that, hey, hold on, there's something really important going on here with this product. The other thing we're also seeing, an important resource for you all to think about, is the movement in terms of apps and the ecosystem around apps. So, for example, there's a website called readyforwindows.com. It's driven by a lot of the telemetry and the feedback that we have, and it's essentially a register of all of the apps that have declared support for Windows 10. And there are names like SAP and Salesforce.com and Oracle on that list. So we're sort of seeing a lot of momentum around those things. And I think one of the things that's incredibly gratifying for me is the feedback we get around compatibility for the operating system. We get a lot of folks telling us, you know, hold on, we went and we upgraded to Windows 10 in a pilot. We were expecting a lot of work to do around remediation of apps and, you know, changing our deployments and, you know, reaching out and, you know, like sourcing new drivers, et cetera, et cetera. And that's not the experience we had. Fun fact, Windows 10 is the most compatible version of Windows we've ever released. And with the compatibility, you know, what that meant for us was we literally had hundreds of people around the world working on Windows compatibility to migrate from Windows 7 and 8.1 to 10 for several years. And that's why Windows 10 is essentially where it is today in terms of its compatibility. And with every feature update, we're updating it forward and on and just getting better. On the slide, you see a couple of stats. They're stats that came out of the Forrester survey. And the Forrester survey basically looked at what's the return on investment for people deploying Windows 10. And what they found was that for those organizations that deployed early, they found a 233% return on investment in their deployment and a payback period of approximately 14 months. Some of the additional stats that are baked in there are the ones you see, 15% of desktop management time savings and 33% reduction in the security issues and the time to resolve those issues. So we're clearly seeing some significant benefits around the deployment of Windows 10 and what Windows 10 means for a lot of people that are sort of getting on the bandwagon. Okay. So as part of my discussion today around Windows 10 and why it's a great engine for your digital transformation, I'm going to cover off three important areas. We're going to talk about deployment. I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the Creators Update and some of the features and capabilities coming through on the Creators Update, and also some of our philosophical points of view around the Creators Update and the things we want to get done. Hint, hint, the Creators Update has got a whole pile of stuff in there. You might have seen some of the things that we advertised and talked about, but there is a lot of serious work in there for corporations, enterprises, underlying platform, optimizations. There's just a, insert expletive, ton of work that's gone into that update. And the final thing, and it's kind of not negotiable, is security and some of the advances we've made in the underlying platform to keep your corporate environments as secure as possible. So let's jump into some of the deployment capabilities. So when you migrate to Windows 10, we talked a little bit about compatibility, but one of the things that we spent a lot of time on and made sure that works well is honoring the investment that you've already made in terms of your skills, your management, and your infrastructure. So for example, when you migrate to Windows 10, it's perfectly viable to continue running your systems as domain-joined systems that are managed through group policy, you're running SCCM in your environment, and you know that works. But the other thing we think a lot about is we want to also evolve into, from the traditional on-premises sort of management deployment kind of technologies, to also leverage some of the cloud technologies. And you can see some of the analogs that are coming through today around the cloud technologies. You know, the Azure Active Directory, AD Join, Intune, et cetera, et cetera. Now, for us, this is not an either-or equation. It's totally fine to have a hybrid management approach and to pick and choose the components that you use as part of your deployment and your management approach. So it's totally fine to sort of say, you know, I've got my Active Directory, I'm running my scripts, I've got my policies, I've got my management capabilities, I know how to deploy stuff in my environment, but hey, there are some systems that I want to start connecting up to the cloud through Azure Active Directory, stuff like that. The other thing that is super important to us is that the cloud, and this is like a little bit of a difference in thinking, the cloud isn't just about data centers and pushing stuff that lives in the data center up to the cloud. In WDG, the Windows and Devices Group, we think that the cloud plays an important role in terms of managing your devices in your environment as well. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about one of these approaches that we have around leveraging the cloud and the technology that we have in the cloud to help you dramatically minimize the amount of time it takes to migrate to Windows 10. We've used our compatibility service in the sky. Essentially, all of the knowledge that we have, this real-time view of, you know, all the, you know, the apps that we've encountered, the compat issues, all of that kind of stuff. And we've offered that up to you in a piece of technology which we call Windows Upgrade Analytics. Quick show of hands, who's heard of Windows Upgrade Analytics? There's a few, maybe those people that own the BMW in Scott's talk earlier today. Sorry, I don't know if that's a running joke or not. Anyway, Windows Upgrade Analytics essentially uses our cloud service, it uses our knowledge base and our big data mining to provide you your own customized view, similar to the view that we had when we were migrating Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 to Windows 10, except we were doing it for hundreds of millions of machines. And the way this works is we leverage the opt-in feedback from Windows 7 and Windows 8.1. You get to choose which systems you involve in this. And what it does is it tracks upgrade readiness of those devices. It tells you things like, you know, which apps are a potential problem, which drivers are a problem, and also suggests remediations. Sometimes you can upgrade to a newer version of an app, or maybe there's a newer driver out there that's available for you to sort of push onto those machines. The other thing it does is it also gives you an opportunity to see the machines that are ready to go. These machines that are green, so to speak, and you can go away and basically organize to deploy them. So it also drives deployments from 7.1, 7, 8.1. And the final point I also wanted to make as well is Windows Upgrade Analytics also helps maintain your environment in terms of going from one feature update of Windows 10 to another feature update of Windows 10. So I've yammered on for a little while about this, but I'm going to ask Zach from my team to come up and show you a demo of Windows Upgrade Analytics.
Thanks, Bill. So as Bill said, we're working to make sure that your migration from Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 to 10, and then your ability to stay current from Windows 10 to Windows 10 feature updates is easier than ever before. And the way we're doing that is through Upgrade Analytics. Some of you raised your hands and mentioned that you were familiar with the tool. That's great. We've been available in public preview since last summer. You'll see that the tool looks like this. We've organized it into a visual dashboard that takes you through the upgrade workflow end to end. We start by giving you a comprehensive inventory of the computers, apps, and drivers within your organization. From there, we leave it up to you to tell us which apps are important within your enterprise. So we want you to go through this huge problem of 34,000 applications and tell us which ones matter. Which ones are the ones that are business critical, which ones are important, and which ones can we ignore? From there, we take a focus on resolving the issues that arise within your enterprise. We call out immediately any application that you have that has an issue that's known to Microsoft. And you'll see if we click into this known issues blade, we get a view like this for each application. I want to zoom in to show you guys real quick. What you're able to see is the issue that Microsoft has identified. In this case, this particular application is blocking your upgrade. We'll give you our guidance on how to mitigate that issue. In this case, you just need to remove the application before upgrading, but it may work on the new operating system. So it'll block your upgrade, but once you've upgraded, you may have the opportunity to reinstall it. And then, of course, we give you the ability to define an upgrade decision based on your ability to mitigate this particular issue. From there, we move on to the applications with no known issues. These are the rest of the applications within your enterprise. And for these, we're able to give you additional telemetry-based insights to help you make your decisions. For instance, we've integrated with Ray for Windows to show you adoption statuses of your applications within the commercial ecosystem. In this case, this version of Java is highly adopted within the Win10 ecosystem. We reiterate in the guidance column that this means the application has been installed on at least 100,000 commercial Win10 devices without significant issues. And maybe this criteria is sufficient for you to say that this application is ready to upgrade. Maybe it's not. But ultimately, we leave that decision up to you. You have full control over which applications are ready to upgrade and which applications still need to be evaluated. Jumping back to our dashboard. Lastly, a new feature that we're implementing very soon, this is coming soon, is what we're calling our proposed action plan. This particular feature shows you a prioritized list of the applications and drivers within your organization that have yet to be reviewed for upgrade. In this case, if you have a project that has a certain time and a certain budget associated with it in the context of upgrading, you're able to see which applications and drivers you can test in order to get the most bang for your buck. So in this case, if we were to rationalize over, let's say, these top 10 applications here, then we can see right away that we'll be able to unblock 13% of the machines in our organization just by fixing those top 10 apps. So in this way, you can prioritize your testing based on which applications and drivers will give you the greatest return. And lastly, of course, we give you the ability to see which computers in your organization have that green light and are ready to deploy. You can export the list from the tool here and import it into your own software deployment system. We also integrate directly with SCCM. You can use our connector to export the list directly to your SCCM and initiate the upgrade in that way. As I said, we're currently available in public preview, but as of this conference, we're very happy to announce that we will be releasing in general availability starting on March 1st. So we really hope you'll give it a shot.
So as Zach said, we've just made the call to take Windows Upgrade Analytics to a full release. And you can sort of see the value that it can bring and the insight that it actually gives you about your environment and making decisions. I've personally worked with some of the biggest banks in this country a while ago now doing a migration. The last migration I worked on was a migration from Windows 95 to Windows 2000, which involved 55,000 seats in an organization. And that was, you know, in some ways, partially responsible for the genesis of this idea and bringing the technology that we ourselves used. That report that Zach showed you, we had the same report for the ecosystem of Windows computers in the world around, and we refer to it as the Lyft report. And, you know, it's like, you know, if I fix these problems, if I, you know, if we make sure that these APIs and the behavior of these APIs goes back to being exactly what Windows 7 did, we get to get all of these applications coming across with us. So it's super powerful. I highly recommend you go to the session tomorrow. Zach's doing a deep dive at 8:15 in the morning, bright and early, where you can find out more about it. Now, the other thing as well that I wanted to spend some time on was that this cloud-based approach, leveraging the telemetry and the insights that we can bring to you, is something that we've been pleasantly surprised with Windows Upgrade Analytics. So one of the things that happened last Friday that we didn't make it into the deck for today, because we're all on planes and everything, but one of the things we did last Friday was we announced the next member of this family. That member is called the Update Compliance tool or system. And basically, what Update Compliance does is, in a similar sort of way, it gives you insight into all of the devices in your organization, what revision level they're at, and gives you the opportunity to make sure that if you need to go away and apply patches, or if you need to go away and sort of move them forward, you've got that level of insight. And from my perspective, this is an area that we intend on continuing to invest in, because we believe that there are so many more valuable things that we can bring to you and insights we can bring to you through this kind of mechanism to help you accelerate deployments. And like I said before, as part of a digital transformation, really optimize your operations and your insight into your environments. So I also wanted to riff on for a moment around the whole idea of staying current. Like with Windows Upgrade Analytics, it's a tool to get you current and help you stay current. But part of staying current is also understanding the release timelines and the release cadence from us. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the release lifecycle, because this has been a point of confusion, discussion. And so I felt like, this is an important part of the discussion for today in terms of where we're going with this and what we've done. So what you see in front of you here is the release lifecycle that we have today for what we term a feature update of Windows 10. Now, you see that purple phase. One of the things that many people sort of tell me is, we wait until you guys RTM a release before we even start to look at it. And it's such a lost opportunity. That purple phase, the phase what I'm referring to as Windows Insiders and Feedback, that is the channel to the development team at Microsoft. That is the channel we look at. We look at it from a big data perspective. We look at it from a, what's clustering in terms of things that are coming through in our community. We have a weekly meeting where 20 directors as part of the Windows and Devices group sit down and look at this channel, plus a few other channels as well, but we look at this channel to tell us, what do we need to go and fix? What do we need to go and change? How is this product going? I encourage you all to think hard about getting on board with our active branch, getting on board with the code that is under development. And I don't say that selfishly as the owner of the Insider program, but we built this thing for a reason. We built it for a reason because we wanted to be agile with feedback. We wanted to be able to hear from you. And I'm going to be talking a little bit more about this in a few slides. Right. Then we declare a release. And then there's a period of time where you're going to deploy that further in your organization. And by the way, one of the points I should have made was, as part of the pre-release bits, the bits under development, we're not expecting you to sort of deploy them broadly. You might have a few machines in a few departments which are representative of your organization, run by technically savvy people that can deal with, essentially a beta product. And you also get choices around the beta versus sort of alpha type style. So anyway, then we get into the release. And then you've got a period of time to do a broader deployment and understand the pilots and making sure that you've got the right things going on to validate and ensure that the release is appropriate. And then we go into the production phase, 12 months minimum. The other thing that's important to note is, from a support perspective, we support two of these concurrently. So this is what the picture actually looks like. And what I've got mapped out here is essentially all of the releases of Windows 10 plus the two that we intend on shipping in 2017. So you can see the original Windows 10 in July 2015, then we did the November update, the anniversary update last August, and then the creators update coming soon, and then another one. So from a support perspective, and actually another point that I should have made before on the other slide, but I forgot to, was that we've also changed it so that we've added 60 days or 2 months onto that timeline from a pilot and production perspective. So there's a full-blown 18 months that's part of that phase of the project. But let's say you've deployed the November update and you're running on the November update. Based on the discussion we just had, you've got till the back end of 2017 to move to the anniversary update. and remain supported in terms of that cadence. Now, you know, we believe that this approach works for most customers, but it's still something that we're having active dialogues with our customers on and feedback. So feel free to let us know. The other thing I also wanted to call out was Config Manager also lets you run a lot of those deployments for the release product. It sort of gives you this centralized dashboard where you can create your plans, you can develop custom deployment rings. It's a great tool for actually going and driving those deployments of Windows 10. Right. Who likes the size of feature updates? Trick question. None of you like the size of feature updates? What, no one likes 3 gigs or so every few months? So one of the things that we've had quite a bit of feedback on is the size of the feature updates for Windows 10. The feature updates of Windows 10 are effectively a full-blown package. You know, for those of you who you know what an ISO is, the feature updates till now have been that full package, and then as part of the upgrade, we basically sort of lay down a new set of bits. But for many organizations, and not just organizations that have got occasionally connected networks, many organizations with remote branch offices and just like where bandwidth is expensive and difficult to deal with, or they've got lossy networks, this can become a bit of a problem. So, about a year ago, probably a little bit more actually, more like 15 months ago, we decided to renovate our update system for feature updates. Our update system in the code that you're running today is very client-centric. A lot of decisions are made on the client about what pieces do I need. There are very chatty protocols between the client and Windows Update around the, hey, do you have this? Hey, you've got this one for me? Ooh, I might need this thing too. So we're changing that. Because there's many reasons why it's valuable not to do all of that stuff on a client. Number one, another thing I care a lot about is the battery life of your client. Doing all of that expends network cycles. I mean, you are burning electrons, people. Don't waste electrons. So you're burning cycles, making decisions about what bits need to be run. There's CPU that goes on. There's networking that's happening around pulling these things down. A lot of it's a metadata conversation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the way the unified update platform technology works is the device essentially wakes up. It basically has a way to express, I'm running all these bits. Sends that up to Windows Update, and the service makes a decision about what bits that device needs. So what that means is during 2017, our feature update process is going to be a case of sending down the diffs because you've got a whole bunch of things down on your machine already. Not all of those things change, feature update to feature update. So let's send you down the bits that you need as part of that. Or, depending on where the device is, if the device is way, way, way back, there'll be a different sort of decision made. Eventually, we get to the point where we sort of say, wow, this device is way back. We're going to bring it forward with what we call a canonical update. And as part of this, we're also sort of renovating some of the way we sort of pull all this stuff together. It's an important piece of technology. It's something that we're doing for this year. And we believe that it's going to make it even easier and deploy more value to you as part of deploying your updates. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to announce today was that first phase that I talked about, that feedback-giving phase. One of the things that we've done is we've heard quite a bit of feedback around, this is great, it's working, but there are some things that would be great to have as part of the Insider program that make it easier for me to house devices inside my environment. Authentication mechanisms that are more natural in a corporate environment, feedback mechanisms that work in that environment as well. Essentially, another ring for IT pros to live and give feedback in that is more tuned to the kinds of scenarios that you all have in your daily work versus the broad millions of insiders that we have, many of which are working on home PCs, their gamer rigs, and like all sorts of various different scenarios. So what we're doing today is we're announcing that in the next couple of months, we are going to add to the program. And for those of you who are interested in learning more, feel free to go to that link, aka.ms, WIP for IT Pros. You'll fill out a short survey and you'll get more information and you'll be plugged into this program for when it lights up. Okay. All right. So we've talked about the investments we're making in terms of making it easier to deploy Windows. The next part of the conversation is about using Windows. And what I wanted to do here was to talk a little bit about some of the new things that are coming as part of the Creators Update. And instead of yapping about it, I thought I'd show a video. Let's go for it.
The spirit of creativity lives in all of us. It compels us to move forward.
So tell me, do you love
I paint with colors.
I paint with numbers.
I paint with words.
I sculpt in 3D.
I sculpt in color.
I sculpt young minds to go further.
I design skyscrapers.
I design new worlds.
I share ideas.
I share experiences.
I compose symphonies of music.
I compose symphonies of science.
What we create is more than just our work. It is our passion. Microsoft helps you turn that passion into reality with technology that is personal, natural, and intuitive. So nothing comes between you and your ideas. Welcome to a world where every person is empowered to achieve more. And every idea can make an impact.
Cool. Did you get all that? It's going to be a test. No. What you saw was some of the features coming in the Creators Update. And what I wanted to discuss as part of this part of the talk was that our approach is really building products that give you this notion of choice without compromise. We work closely with our ecosystem partners to come up with a wide variety of devices that can do many, many things. And you saw some of those. For example, you saw the Surface Dial working in combination with the pen on the Surface Studio. And there's lots of examples of innovations that we and our partners are making around those things. So what it means is that, you know, if you're buying PCs for an enterprise, you're going to buy a certain set of devices, and they're going to have some level of security capabilities. But if you're supporting a set of architectural drafts people, you've got choices around a different set of devices and a different set of peripherals. And for us, we think really hard about how do we evolve this ecosystem to serve the hundreds of millions of people that are running Windows today, as well as make it consistent and, you know, develop the software that lights up all of these, you know, really cool experiences. You've seen on the devices front some of the work that we've done with the Surface and essentially sort of calling out, like essentially establishing the two-in-one category where you've got devices that sort of function like a tablet, but the thing has got a lot of horsepower and you can write on that. Surface Book is similar to that in some ways. Full-blown sort of laptop, but again, you can pull off the screen and you can go away, you can write on the screen. It fully supports touch. The Surface Studio. I have it on good word that the Surface Studio is coming soon to Australia. That thing will ruin you. It will absolutely ruin you because its screen is so bloody gorgeous. It is greater than 4K in resolution. And when you immerse yourself in that device and you've used that screen and then you go back to your $200 24-inch, you know, 5-year-old screen, it's not the same. Anyway, I should stop harping about that. When the Surface Studio comes to Australia, and I force the guys to put a picture of it in here, and you start using it, when it comes to Australia, go check it out. Do yourself a favor. Go check it out. But it's not just these devices. I mean, we think about the Surface Hub. So out in the expo hall, you'll see the Surface Hub. The Surface Hub really changes the dynamics of meeting rooms. It really changes the way you can have a conference call and you can collaborate on those calls. There's HoloLens. For those of you who have tried HoloLens, HoloLens gives you, it essentially lights up a new dimension. And it's not just about gamers. There are many sort of engineering uses, and there's many different kinds of uses that we're going to see out of this technology moving forward into the future. We just hit something like 2,500 apps, HoloLens apps, in the store just over the last couple of months. And then we talked about the Surface Studio, and then we've also got the Windows IoT devices. Now, the beauty of all of these things is they're all built on something which we call OneCore. Has anyone heard of the term OneCore? A few have. OneCore is an internal term, but it's part of my language on a daily basis. OneCore is essentially the foundation of everything that is Windows. Like, you take these PCs, you take that Surface Hub, Windows IoT, the mobile platforms, all of that stuff, it's all built on top of this thing called OneCore. It's the first thing we built when we started Windows 10. The beauty of that is the primitives in that operating system, from a management perspective and from many other factors, it's all consistent. It all works the same. You can all access it in the same way. So, super important. Okay, the next thing I wanted to talk about, which is something that we focus on a lot. We focused on a lot for the Creators Update, and I expect that we will do more work in this space, is around accessibility. So when we wake up in the morning, we think about the fact that there are hundreds of millions of users of our products, and we want our products to be applicable to all of them. Now, some of the people that use our products have got disabilities. It becomes harder for them to accomplish some tasks. And for many of those people with disabilities, the computer and the computing devices are so much more important to them in their daily lives. They provide a portal of sorts to the rest of the world, which, for example, sighted people don't think about as much. So, with the Creators Update, there's a couple of things that have gone into the Creators Update. Edge, 100% score on the HTML5 accessibility benchmark. Narada and Cortana are doing way more than before in terms of talking about the things that are going on in the system and the use cases that they actually contribute to. If you build a USB stick and stick it in a Windows PC and you start setup, that is speech-enabled now. That never used to be. So if you were not sighted, you had to go and find another human being to go away and install your computer for you, no matter how technical you were. And the same thing applies to the out-of-box experience. And they're just a few things. There's like a whole litany of other things. So what I also wanted to do here was just to talk a little bit about how far we've come with Windows from an accessibility point of view and show a video which is actually, it's Australian. There's a guy in Australia who's actually talking us through how he uses technology and what it's meant for him. So let's roll the tape.
I was born in the refugee camp. There was a lot of violence and persecution. I fell ill with cataracts, whooping cough, and phthisis. I was probably given a 95% chance of dying. That's where I lost my eyesight.
People are dwarfed by a sea of tents. In a clinic, a medic checks a child's eyes. Fade to black. Rowers glide down the Yarra. Trams pass Melbourne's Queen Victoria Market.
With the gracious help of the United Nations,
hands hold a travel document for Australia.
I came to a better life, and we were lucky enough to be taken by Australia.
A burly man smiles.
My name is Saddam. I'm 24 years old, and I'm currently studying international business at RMIT University. The last time that I recall sight is probably at the age of 2.5.
Sunbeams shine through a gap in the clouds.
And after that, it's all complete darkness.
Cut to black.
I had two choices at that stage where I could have just given in to the darkness or fought it. Mum's love and mum's encouragement pulled me through.
Bill James, industry trainer, RMIT.
Somebody asked him one day, what if there was a magic pill that would restore your sight? He said, I wouldn't take it. I'm comfortable with who I am.
There are so many companies striving for excellence to help someone who's blind. Windows 10 for me is definitely my eyes in some ways, in the literal sense. It does help me to navigate my world. It has helped me to achieve a double diploma. I do have social media, you know, email, paying bills.
Saddam uses a white cane.
It is just invaluable. I can't put a price on how much it's helped me in my life. I use a screen reader, which basically turns the graphical interface for me to use in the keyboard, and I tend to use my Surface Book when it comes to note-taking. All the technology that I have has definitely given me a positive light to achieve all my goals.
His technology blows me away in the way he uses it, because he sits there and it talks to him at such high speed. And if we can help him get access to more technology, that'll allow him to fulfill not only his potential, but potential of other people around him.
With the assistive technology and the power of Windows, it really helps a blind person break down barriers. One of my favorite quotes from one of my favorite authors is, never underestimate the power of your encouragement.
He stands at the uni tram stop.
There's always something better around the corner, and, you know, if you reach for the sky, you may reach the moon.
White text on a blue screen. Do great things. The best Windows ever. The Windows 10 logo features slanted rectangles. The word Microsoft appears beside four colored squares.
That's powerful stuff. It's kind of funny a little bit too, some of that. Accessibility and... You know, I can't express how much we focus on that. It's a topic that comes up, we pretty much talk about it every 2 weeks in terms of where we're at in our product, where we need to be, and you should expect more from us in this space. Okay, the third pillar, the immutable pillar, security. The security landscape has changed. If you think about where we were 10 years ago to where we are today and the things you're dealing with. Oh, shit, I just got a text message. Sorry, I'll start again. So where were we and where were we evolved to? Like the world 10 years ago, we were thinking about script kiddies, email threats, things like that. Fast forward to today's world, where many of the organizations that you guys represent, you've got to deal with organized crime, you know, who've got a monetary reason to sort of get access. Even nation states, for some of the organizations that are represented in this room, even nation states, you know, attacks that are coming through. The landscape is dramatically different to what it was 10 years ago. Now, many of you have put best-of-breed solutions in to combat these things. You've used third-party antivirus. You've put in additional firewalls. There's been a whole bunch of different sort of bolt-on mechanisms into the systems and capabilities that you've put into your product. But it's not enough. It's very difficult, you know, nay impossible, to secure a 10-year-old code base with bolt-on capabilities. One of the critical things from, like trying to secure like a Windows 7 with bolt-on capabilities is akin to building a taller wall when your adversary has figured out how to tunnel underneath the wall. So with Windows 10, we think a lot about this. In fact, there was a study that we sort of use in terms of the impact of some of the security threats in the world today. And it estimates that somewhere around $3 trillion is spent a year in terms of lost productivity and other expenses related to security breaches. Some of you have probably heard about some of the big security breaches that have happened in the world. Big retailers in the United States, banks around the world. And each one of those breaches, on average, is somewhere in the order of $3.5 million in terms of cost. So it's really, really significant. From our perspective, We've made Windows 10 to be the most secure Windows ever. Our approach is that security is built in. We want the capabilities to be built in. It can be definitely augmented, but it's critical that the underlying platform supports you in terms of the base level of support. When you look at our release lifecycle a little while ago, imagine going for 3 to 5 years and us not being able to deliver more security capabilities to you for 3 to 5 years. That was the world we were in with Windows 7 and Windows 8. So in many ways, the release cadence helps us bring these advancements to the world quicker. What you see on this diagram are essentially the 5 pillars that we think about security in Windows today. And our strategy is very much around protecting, detecting, and responding to threats. And what I wanted to do here was, I wanted to basically sort of take those 5 pillars and talk a little bit about, okay, what did Windows 7 look like in that world? And you can sort of see, there were some things. I remember we released Smart Screen, and we did a whole bunch of stuff with TPM. And these are valuable things. BitLocker, all that kind of stuff. But if you take the PCs that are running Windows 7 today and upgrade them, the vast majority of them, to Windows 10, this is how the picture changes. So this is from Windows 7 or 32-bit Windows 8 machines. These are the additional capabilities you get in, things like Trusted Boot. You've got some biometric authentication capabilities built in some of these devices, Windows Information Protection, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if you modernize your devices, we get to play a little bit more. We bring hardware into the puzzle and deliver an even more robust solution that we're updating with every feature update of Windows 10. So let's drill into this a little bit more and talk about hardware-based isolation. I'm an operating system guy. I like operating system stack charts. What you see on the left-hand side is the sort of the canonical stack diagram of Windows 7. You can sort of see there's an operating system kernel. It's running a platform that provides API access to the hardware and other facilities, and then apps right on top of that thing. Now, we spend a lot of time, and we'll continue to spend a lot of time, making that as resilient as possible. What hardware-based isolation does is it allows us to leverage the primitives in the hardware to separate and build out another environment, essentially a system container, where we can put really critical stuff in. And there is, a way stronger defensive barrier between one part of the OS and the other part of the OS. Within that, as part of Windows 10, we have released Device Guard and Credential Guard. Device Guard is a technology which allows administrators to control the signatures that apps must have before they actually get launched in the operating system. It also allows administrators to be able to create a whitelist and add stuff onto that list. Credential Guard is about storing your secrets, passwords, the hashes, those subsystems, so that in the case where there's a breach on the left-hand side, those secrets are defended and protected. The U.S. Defense Force, a major decision, actually, I think the decision that made them adopt Windows 10 was the fact that Credential Guard existed. But we're not stopping there. We are, in 2017, bringing what we call Windows Defender Application Guard to market. And Windows Defender Application Guard is taking the Edge browser and putting it into its own micro VM, putting it into its own environment, based on the decisions that an administrator makes. And the nice thing about this is that, many attacks come through the browser, as you all well know. If you're running in this environment that is essentially thrown away after that session is closed, and if something happens to that environment, you're still protecting the rest of the operating system. These are the kind of defenses that, when you build it into the OS, you get this kind of capability. You can't achieve this kind of protection with bolt-on solutions. You would have to be grossly affecting the underlying operating system. So I wanted to show a video just quickly about the experience for what Application Guard looks like. It's going to go quickly. It doesn't have sound. So just in case the sound guy just like flips the faders, please don't do that because you're going to deafen everyone in the room. But I wanted to sort of show you how, you know, like the way we envision this technology to work. And I'll narrate through. Okay, starts off with a website. Oh, shit. Sorry. Is somebody going to go through and make this, you know, PG-12 friendly? Let me... Okay, there we go. So, there's a website, and this is okay. The administrator, you know, sort of says this is fine to run, and the user's browsing, the user goes and opens a URL, which is not okay. And what ends up happening is we're starting up a VM here, we're starting up another environment, and you can see that Application Guard is prominent. This app runs in that environment. It does whatever it does. From a user's perspective, this is sort of a natural experience. You don't see the other browser with that. And basically, you've got the situation where you get to control the stuff that's okay in your organization and the things that are not okay. Okay. The next piece of our tour, again, in security, in terms of the features and capabilities that we have, is protection against accidental data loss. And for this, we have a technology called Windows Information Protection. You know, 10 years ago, the world was a little bit different in the sense that there was more separation between your work PC and your home PC. And there was kind of like a natural, you know, your work documents kind of lived on one, and your home documents, your music, all of that kind of stuff lived on the other stuff. But that's not the case nowadays. People have personal stuff on their laptops. People, you know, do personal things because, you know, they're changing modes constantly. Windows Information Protection gives a solution to that problem. And what it essentially does is it provides a capability where apps can they can be enlightened to this technology so that those apps know the difference between a corporate document and a personal document. And the corporate documents remain encrypted, and the personal documents stay unencrypted or don't get encrypted. And the beauty here is that you don't need multiple versions of apps. But I can talk about this for a long time. But I'm going to invite Paul up to show us the technology in action. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. So the scenarios that we are looking at for Windows Information Protection is where we share devices between your corporate and your personal activities. So as an example, in Microsoft, we are allowed to use our corporate devices as a personal. We can have our personal emails, Twitter accounts, Facebook. All this data is accessible. What the danger here is that when I get an email from someone having corporate confidential information, it's pretty easy for me, either intentionally or by accident, copy-pasting data from one source to another. So what Bill was describing was that let's find a way which is very easy to deploy, very easy to manage, and provide you that safety so when you have activity-based working as an example, your data is still protected. Let me press number 8. Here. So I received an email from someone, and they told me a super secret thing here. And it is half secret. We changed the product name for our upgrade analytics. It is now going to be part of a family called Windows Analytics, and then we'll have a family within that. So I received a secret here. And what I'm going to do, I'm super excited about this change, and I'm going to be the first one putting on my Twitter account. So I go into Twitter, so that's my personal Twitter. I decide to tell everyone, even though that either I know I'm not supposed to do it, or I'm a little bit clumsy, so by accident I'll put that in here. So what happens is I copied it from the other email, and I now try to paste it into my Twitter account. What I get told here is, and there's different, the admin of the organization can choose what is going to happen. In this case here, my organization has said, alrighty, I do trust Paul, but I'm going to make sure that when he does things that we have an audit trail. So here, Microsoft is saying, alrighty, I trust that Paul knows how he should manage his data, but I'm going to tell him, Paul, this might violate our policy, and I'm going to keep an audit trail. There is the opportunity that you can cut it completely. So you can just say that Paul have no rights to copy stuff from personal, sorry, from corporate to personal. So I can either give access here, and I can put it on Twitter. Similar, this technology is across different applications. So if I write an email as well, and I want to put it in here, it will give me the same error message. The same will happen if I take Bill's presentation and I want to copy paste that onto my OneDrive, my personal OneDrive, that will have the exact same error message. It'll tell me, Paul, are you sure you want to do this? And in this case, it will allow me to do it. That works across all applications. There is still some we are trying to get enlightened, but for now it's all applications. Most of the Microsoft applications. That's pretty much it.
Verse 7. Cool. Thanks, Paul. Okay. So, I suppose the next question along the line is, can you defend systems like 100% of the time? There was an interesting study that Verizon did just a little while ago. And what happened as part of the study was a malicious person sent a government organization, 100 people in a government organization, an email with an attachment. Of those 100 people, 30 people opened the email. Of those 30, 12 clicked on the attachment. And that was it. Those 12 machines were then infected with malware. Now, when we looked at the piece of mail this person had sent to the government department, you really could not tell that it was from an attacker. It was, it was like following all the guidelines. The language was appropriate. It wasn't from some Nigerian prince. It was an appropriate, the knowledge was correct. The URLs were perfect. The only thing that was going on with them is the dots were moved. Human beings don't pick that up. It just looks legit. So there you go. These people were then infected. And, you've got so many security mechanisms in place, but, we are talking government employees who are paranoid for a living clicking on this thing. And the really scary statistic was that it took 4 minutes to get those 12 machines infected. And then, once these folks are inside your organization, on average, these attacks are really, really hard to detect. 200 days is the sort of the global average for being able to detect and remediate, to detect one of these breaches in a network. That's 200 days where these nefarious people are attacking other machines in your environment, looking at your data sources, grabbing documents, grabbing files, hacking into databases and doing all kinds of nefarious things. I was told that in Asia Pacific, the number is more like 500 days, right? So, we believe that post-breach is an important part of any security solution. And to that, we bring to market something that we call Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. ATP is a piece of client software and a robust service in the cloud, which basically looks for anomalous behavior on devices. So for example, if you had a machine that was happily going and running some Word documents and and connecting to a corporate server for files and, like, you know, working on the intranet. And then one day, this machine started firing off thousands of PowerShell scripts and doing port scans on your local network and trying to connect to these addresses in the internet that you'd never seen before. Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection finds those kinds of things, alerts you to them, and shuts them down. And it's not just that level of blatant attack. There are more subtle things. That's why we have this cloud service, and we have a set of experts looking at potential exploits that are coming through to provide this level of post-breach detection and correction. So, I'm going to ask Jake to come up and demo Windows Defender ATP. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you. Just going to change machines real quick, but I'm going to show you, today I'm going to show you an attack that's very similar to the scenario that you heard a minute ago. Great. So what you're going to see in this video real quick is essentially a spear phishing attack. And what a spear phishing attack is, if you don't know, is essentially it's a targeted piece of mail that is sent to your organization that's so specific you can't really tell the difference between the spam that you normally see and a spear phishing attack. So here, you'll actually see that this email, and it's a little bit fuzzy, sorry about that, but it's coming from Brian Eagle Contoso to Liz. And Liz, Brian's actually Liz's manager. So it looks very legitimate, has their brand on here, Contoso, etc. But as I play the video here, you'll see what sort of thing it unfolds. On your left, you'll see the attacker machine, and then on the right, you'll see the Liz's machine. And essentially, all Liz has to do in order to be owned in this specific example is press this enable content that runs a macro, which then opens a backdoor to her machine out to the internet, which is also called command and control, or C2. So essentially, what happens now is that the attacker has a channel, a communication channel, through all the firewalls, through all the IPSs and things like that, into Liz's machine. And now Liz's machine is up to the bidding of the attacker. But essentially what you saw there was, I mean, that's a pretty innocent thing, right? You get a Word email or a Word document from your boss, you open it, you enable the macro, and boom, you're owned. So that's a pretty scary thing. So how do we detect it? So through all these things, what we're going to talk about now is post-breach. And what post-breach does is that it assumes the fact that all your defenses will become be bypassed at some point, and you will have to find an attacker on the inside. And that's exactly what Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection does. So in this case, this specific attack happened here. So this is the web-based portal that we have here. And essentially, this attack was done by an organization of organized crime named Nero Blaze. And if I don't know who Nero Blaze is, kind of an interesting name, essentially I can click it, and you have access to all of our threat intelligence on Nero Blaze. And we're tracking this information through over a billion endpoints of telemetry that we're getting in from Xbox Live, from our public services, and Office 365. I can also see where they are prevalent in the world and where they attack and things of that nature. So lots of deep information there. Here I have what's called the incident graph. Now, what this tells me is one of the challenges around like a security operations center is piecing together the pieces of the pie to try to reconstruct the attack to know where the person came in and where they went and what they did, things like that. And that's exactly what the incident graph tells you. So here you can see they came in through Liz Bean's machine, and they ran these executables. And then those executables were then found on these other machines in the organization. And each one of these is contextual, so I can click on them and see what the deal is here. But let's click over on Liz Bean's machine and drill a little bit further in. Here we can see what machine or what users have logged into this machine in the past, and I can also see the alerts that are in this context. So if I click on the Nero Blaze attack, it'll show me all the different things that are in the Nero Blaze attack that were in play here, and you can see that here. So the different executable payloads or the portable executions or PEs that they were run, et cetera. And I can take it a step further and say, okay, well, it looks like the first alert that came in was through this Office one here. So if I click on that one, It'll actually drill down and give me details about how this actual attack happened. So now I can go in and say, okay, it looks like Outlook.exe ran something or saved some attachments to disk. And I can even track down to the email in which that occurred in as well. So now I'm kind of reconstructing the attack and things like that. From there, I can do some more investigation and things like that, but what I wanted to show was just some information about how to drill into the attack and see exactly what happened. And again, I can go to other machines and do more forensic analysis from there on out. There's some actions we can do, et cetera, but I'll save those for a more deep dive session. But just know, this product is not in the business of stopping known threats. This product is in the business of detecting unknown threats, and those are really the ones that haunt us, because those are the ones that are in your corporation for 200 days plus. But if you're interested in learning more about Defender Advanced Threat Protection, here is a PowerShell shameless plug. So come to those sessions, and I'd be more than happy to talk more about it.
Thanks, Jake. He saved me from doing a plug. He did his own shameless plug. That's awesome. I love it. Now, I'm blind, so I have to... There you go, number 7. Oh, okay, cool. Okay, we're almost there. So, you've seen a lot today. We've covered deploy, we've covered the use scenarios, we've talked a little bit about the creators update, what's coming through with the creators update, and we've covered a lot of ground in terms of the security capabilities. I hope you've got more insight into why we think Windows 10 can really help digital transformation and help you run in these environments. Now, what I wanted to close out with was a local organization who have adopted Windows 10 and deployed thousands and thousands of desktops, and they're on their own digital transformation journey. So let's talk a little bit about, let's show the video, actually, of the Australian Department of Human Services, 40,000 seats, 2,000 or more per night at the peak. And, along the way, they've shifted from desktop to mobile. They're using modern applications, and they've done a lot to significantly reduce the cost of running their infrastructure.
Australia is one of the most beautiful countries in the world. It's arguably got the best beaches and, in fact, the most livable cities. Although the geography shows that most of the population lives on the eastern seaboard, those most vulnerable are in some geographically distant and remote areas. Our vision was to provide excellence in service for all Australians, essentially providing service anytime, anywhere, when the user needs assistance.
Australia's a big country. The tyranny of distance has made things very difficult in the past. What we're able to achieve here is to bring everyone closer together, to be able to communicate quickly. I think the decision was made pretty early to roll out Windows 10 across the organisation.
We believe that our rollout of devices across a national network is certainly the largest in the Southern Hemisphere, is one of the first in federal government.
Express Plus Connect was something that we saw as the next generation. The implementation of EPC on the Universal App platform is opening up a world of innovation for us. We then thought that this would be a perfect avenue for us to proceed with. The whole concept of ORTC means that we're using minimal bandwidth, we've got the flexibility to be mobile, and it just really works for us in remote areas and places with low bandwidth. Being a government department, we had to meet strict guidelines on privacy, but we ticked all those boxes, and with Windows 10, we're able to implement it quite easily.
What the technology will do for us is allow us to connect these most vulnerable citizens to the right officer with the right skills when they need it, rather than we are able to come to them.
My main focus for my job is to interview customers of the department in regard to their barriers for employment and trying to assist them to get back into the workforce. I'm getting a more holistic view of the customer. I get to see the bigger picture for them. I feel that we get a better rapport because I can connect with them, they can connect with me. They're not having to travel, they're not quite so anxious, they're not quite so frustrated, and they can see that I'm listening. And I feel as a psychologist that I'm certainly meeting their needs better.
Excited about the innovation we've seen, and I believe our partnership with Microsoft will take us to a new level of servicing never seen before.
So, the time is now. Thank you so much for your attention. Please come and visit us at the booth. Connect with the experts and drill in. You heard about a number of sessions, deep dive sessions that are going on tomorrow. And please join the Windows Insider program. Thank you very much.